Welcome to Summer School, everyone, and to this course, A Developmental State, The Challenges Ahead. Alec Irwin, who is the coordinator of this course, will introduce our eminent guest, Dr. Moyo, from the African Development Bank, in a minute. First, I just want to say a few quick words about Alec himself, who will be delivering two of the lectures during the week on Tuesday and Thursday. Alec Irwin has had a long and distinguished public career. As a young and brilliant lecturer in economics at the University of Natal, my husband taught him and said I had to say brilliant. He involved himself in the early stages of the formation of the independent trade union movement in South Africa. He was General Secretary of FASATU between 1979 and 1983, a key figure in the formation of COSATU in 1986 and in NUMSA, and after the 1994 elections was Deputy Minister of Finance in the Mandela Cabinet. Between 1996 and 2004, he was Minister of Trade and Industry, and between 2004 and 2008, Minister of Public Enterprises. He was also President of the important United Nations Conference on Trade and Development for 4 years. The course as a whole addresses a critical issue for political life, not just here, but in the world at large, the question of the role of the state in development. Alec is in a unique position to consider the implications of a commitment to a developmental state, and we thank him for the work he's done in designing the course and securing the presence of important policy makers and commentators, such as Dr. Moyo, whom he will now introduce.
Thank you very much, Ingrid, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this series of lectures. I will introduce Dr. Moyo in a second. I'd just like to say a few words about what we would like to do and the purpose of the lectures. We're looking at the role of the state in the economy or the concept of a developmental state. But I should warn you that we're probably not going to do it in a strictly academic, theoretical, economic way. I think that the issues that are perplexing many of us and what we would like to touch on are somewhat more profound issues about the state, what would have to be in place, particularly here in South Africa, but more widely in Africa, for states to function effectively. Because it's only if we can get some degree of effective state function that you will achieve the developmental aspirations that I think many of us have. And we're also going to try and get behind some of the fairly complacent propositions that are usually made around states, statehood, development and developmental states, because I think this is a real challenge for all of us. And I think you'll find that during the course of the talks, and I know that Nkosana is going to do this, a great deal of emphasis will be placed on what is the actual role of citizenry? Are we active enough as citizens? Are we engaging with these really serious matters of the governance of our society at a sufficiently serious level? There are a host of things we could have decided to focus on. I mean, the modern world is extremely complicated. So what we're looking at today is Africa. But as I'm sure will happen, Nkosana will raise some more deep-seated issues around statehood. Tomorrow I'll try and look a bit more closely at this concept that's used often, but not sure whether it's got content of a developmental state. Then Chippy Olver, who's a former Director General in the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, will look at what we feel is one of the really key challenges facing all modern states, but a particularly difficult challenge for developing states, and that's the environment, the relationship between the environment, development, industrialization, and many other issues. And the next day I will look at another, what we think is an absolutely critical issue, which is energy. What is an energy system? What are the options open? And what are the great difficulties, especially for African states, in developing a modern energy system? And finally, Joel Netshitenzi, who was previously head of the Policy Coordinating and Advisory Services in the Mbeki and for a while in the Zuma governments, will have a close look at what the current position he thinks is in South Africa and what the prospects are. So that's the series that we're looking at. Dr. Nkosana Moyo starts life as a physicist, theoretical physicist, if I'm not mistaken. Nkosana, probably the first black Zimbabwean to qualify as a theoretical physicist. He's also a pilot, taught himself to fly. Then became involved in business, and more in the financial domain, and then was asked to join the Zimbabwean government, and was where I first met him as Trade and Industry Minister in Zimbabwe, until he resigned in 2001. Subsequently, he's fulfilled quite a number of roles in international financial institutions, and now occupies an important position, which is the Chief Operating Officer of the African Development Bank. So Dr. Nkosana Moyo, over to you.
Good evening. Alec asked me to try and share with you in a dialogue form rather than a lecture, and I hope, therefore, all I need to do is to set the scene, lob a few ideas out there, and then hopefully we can have an exchange of ideas and see how applicable some of these thoughts are. Now, the basis of my observations in terms of the capacity of African states to deliver is that I've worked across the African continent for close to two decades now. So I've pretty well worked out there, traveled a lot, and what I want to do is to be quite specific and not say Africa, but sub-Saharan Africa, because North Africa is quite different in terms of its capacity to deliver compared to sub-Saharan Africa. Although the umbrella topic is the developmental state, I'm not going to go into the definitions of what it is, whether it's justified or not. I just look at the capacity of these countries to deliver. And I'll make a rather trite observation, if you like, which I don't think is worth debating. By and large, sub-Saharan African states do not have the capacity to deliver. And I don't think I should go into the evidence and why for and so on, but in the development world in particular, it's very clear that the resources that have flown in, come into sub-Saharan Africa, they've got no results to justify, if you like, compared to other regions like maybe Latin America or the Asian countries. That's just a fact. So we've got resources that have come into the subcontinent, but the results to show for that are very disappointing. And I think that observation on its own is not particularly interesting. What is really interesting, I think, is to try and dig behind what could be the explanations as to why this is the situation. What might lie behind this issue of lack of delivery? And these are the issues I would like maybe to suggest some particular ways of looking at it and see what you think about it. I want to focus on four areas in particular. I want to tease out the concept of the social contract. As Alec has already said, do citizens in sub-Saharan Africa really engage and force a definition of what the relationships should be between the citizens and government in order to try and force, if you like, persuade government to deliver? So the social contract. I also want to explore the concept of differentiating between a shareholder and a manager. And I'll explain why we can use that particular paradigm, if you like. Thirdly, there is a concept I call paying in the wrong currency. That, I think, is applicable to what happens in sub-Saharan Africa, which, again, I would like to share with you. And lastly, I want us to consider the possibility that maybe the architecture of the arms of government delivering services to populations need to be reviewed as maybe being inappropriate for our circumstances in sub-Saharan Africa. So let's go back to the concept of the social contract. When you read some of the references that I know that Alec is going to be giving to you, if they have not reached you yet, it is fascinating for me that the old world had people who engaged quite intensely, emotionally, lots of energy into trying to configure or think through what kind of societies they wanted to have. they didn't just take it as a given that somebody was going to do it for them. They engaged in defining what kind of societies they wanted to have. And I think the configuration, therefore, of the relationships of the citizens and government and what government is in many ways an agent, not a principle, but an agent to execute on what the citizens want in terms of a general will, is a concept which I don't feel is there in our midst today. In other words, citizens are not engaged. They take it as a given. But that architecture comes from, in many ways, a part of the world which may be considered to be irrelevant to us. The journey they've traveled and the journey we are traveling are not the same. And therefore, for me, I think it's necessary for us to review regularly what that should look like. What kind of societies do we want to have? And I think out of that definition of what kind of societies we want to have, there will also come an understanding of the different roles that we as citizens, as voters, should play, and what our governments should do in order to deliver on our mandate, not on their mandate, but our mandate. Yeah. But it has to come from a fairly robust engagement, I think, in terms of the social contract idea. The takeaways from that for me are that politicians and civil servants are not principals. They should play the role of much more of an agent, and there ought to be an understanding that they go out there to execute on what we want, not some other agenda that they want. Even the electoral process says different parties come and propose to us what it is they would offer us. Once we've chosen which one, it becomes ours, and they become an agent to deliver it for us. Yeah? And I think it's a major departure point. I think in politics at the moment, we literally let them get away with an ownership which I don't think they should have. I think the ownership is ours, not the government's one. And government ought to be listening more carefully and executing on our agenda. And you will see when we come to the issue of the architecture of the arms of delivery, that is quite important. So let me move on to the second issue, what I call the shareholder-manager dichotomy, if you like. I think that at some level, government could be considered as a shareholder of the program that they bring to the electorate, and once it's been voted for, it's subsumed in the ownership by the population at large. And I think we need to just get clarity about, does ownership necessarily mean that he or who owns needs necessarily to manage? Or maybe even more provocatively, do owners always have the skills to manage? In the corporate world, it's clear that is not the case. And over time, we've gotten sort of to accept this. I own an enterprise as an entrepreneur. I hire managers to run, depending on what it is I want to do. If I want to run an airline, I don't have to be a pilot. I go and hire somebody who has been highly trained to come and be my pilot. But I still retain the ownership, and there is no dispute. So I would like to suggest that in politics, we ought to explore a similar concept, in the sense that politicians and political parties that win on a mandate of a proposal to the population, they may be good at conceptualizing what needs to be done. But I think the track record shows that actually, by and large, they are hopeless at delivering on it. And that is a management element. Yeah. So my proposition number one, is that when political parties win elections, we need to then say to them, it's okay for you to be in parliament. That's where you belong, in the legislature. But what we currently call the executive, you don't necessarily have to be there. You hire people, highly trained, where we know exactly what it is that we want to do, and those people are hired, they come and do a good job. If they don't do a good job, they get fired. I think just the dynamic of managing, it would become much easier to get rid of those people. When it's politicians and members of political parties, the political parties in question then protect incompetence. And I think we just need to rethink about the engineering of separating what I would call a shareholder conceptually and a manager who manages to deliver. So that's proposition number one. The third issue, what I call paying in the wrong currency, is equally, I think, interesting as a proposition. So this country, he had some kind of quality, a struggle. Alec Ewing would be would understand exactly what I'm getting at. And what is interesting in all of our countries is that the political party wins an election. And then Nkosana, who belongs to this political party, comes along and says, "Mr. President, I love flying." And what does the president do? The president hires Nkosana Moyo as the chief executive of South Africa Airways. Yeah? And my view, my proposal, is that what the president should say to Nkosana is, "Listen, you did a great job as a foot soldier to get us to win these elections. And to pay back is actually okay. We're going to reward you somewhat. But for the president to be very clear about what is the currency for payback." What do I mean? I do not have to be the chief executive. But what you can say is, you and your family will have a free ticket for the rest of your life to fly anywhere once a year where you like. But you hire someone who knows how to run South Africa Airways to make it viable in order to afford for me to fly as much as I want for the rest of my life. That's what I call paying in the correct currency. So, again, another thought on the table. Then, item number four, the architecture of delivery. So I go back to the legislature. What do we do? We get members of parliament, they go and campaign, and then we appoint ministers in areas that they know absolutely nothing about, not trained in those areas, and we say, go and be responsible for mining, for health, for transportation, and so on and so on. And yet we've got actually an example which is pretty close to how I think we could configure this. The judiciary, on the other hand, parliament legislates. But when it comes to the application of law, we do not just go and get parliamentarians who know nothing about law to be the administrators of law, do we? We go and get people who've been highly trained, who are highly competent, have demonstrated a track record in understanding the application of law. And by and large, although it's not perfect and politicians tend to interfere with this, it's a system which is much closer to what I think the design should be. So on the other side, what am I implying? I think that ministers should be ministers who are actually competent at whatever portfolio you're asking them to go into, demonstrably trained. If it's going to be transportation, my view is that it should be somebody who understands, has been trained, has passed examinations to go and run that particular portfolio. And you can go across the board. Secondly, I would propose that we again apply the concept of manager and shareholder. The party that wins should not necessarily appoint its own people as managers, because it's not necessary. My shareholder role and my management role are not the same. They should not be confused. So when we look around the world, which systems come close to what I'm describing? I think the UK civil service comes close in terms of non-political civil service. But unfortunately, the political level, the politicians, the ministers, and so on, are still drawn from the political parties without any qualifications. I think then you have to go across the Atlantic and go to the US, where the secretaries of state are not necessarily from the elected Congress people or whatever. So you go and get people from the market who are competent and understand the different portfolios that you want them to run, and you use them as hired managers. What are they delivering on? They are delivering on the program that was voted for by the electorate. So there is actually an alignment in the sense that the people have chosen a party on the basis of what it proposed to them. But the delivery has then to be given to people who are competent and have been trained, as opposed to political parties. I think when I look at Africa in terms of why Africa is not delivering, there is nothing fundamental. The competencies are there. If we choose to go and get them, and when I put it very provocatively, again, I've talked to Alec about this, I say to Alec for something like, if I was the president of Zimbabwe, and I went and asked, I don't know how many of you know Ngozi, the lady who used to be the Minister of Finance in Nigeria, and did a fantastic job. So what stops me, as president of Zimbabwe, going to get Ngozi as a hired manager to come and become my Minister of Finance? What is the conflict between citizens benefiting from a job well done by a competent minister to grow the economy, why does being a minister become a citizenship issue? Why does being a minister become a partisan issue, a member of a party? For me, it's a job that needs to be done. We have to deliver on it. And I think if we completely reconfigure this along the lines that I'm putting on the table, I think the capacity to deliver by African states would change dramatically. I would like to leave it there and have a conversation.